Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children 6 and older and in the treatment of adults. She's also an all-time triathlete, so if you ever have a problem breaking through that next level of athletics, give her a call. She can help you out. Or if you're having a problem in life, please don't take it out on your neighbor or anybody in uniform. Please see a licensed physician or mental health provider. Her offices are located at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Her number is 3-689-2466. Guys, it's I'm glad to have everybody back tonight. Ty, it's always good to talk to you. Bob, I can't wait to hear where you go on your vacation when you get back. Armstead, That was a nice vacation you had. If you have any highlights you want to tell us? No?
Let's see. Well, it was awfully windy in Jamaica, but you can't deny the fact that the cloud cover lasted for about 24 to 48 minutes the entire time I was there. So you got to love it.
Oh, wow. Wow. Outstanding.
Nice.
Yeah, it was outstanding. It was great.
Well, Ty, a lot of information came out this week on quite a few fronts. Where do we want to start? With Eddie Hearn and the days at Dazen News on Demetrius Andrade and Triple G?
Honestly, you know, if you're going to ask me, we have Bob and Armstead on the phone. How do we not start with UFC 239? Like,
okay,
we got the MMA crew on the line. You got to start with the biggest card of the weekend, in my opinion, which the main card was literally sandwiched with a decision in the beginning, decision at the end, and the rest were knockouts. It was like a wonderful fabulous event. I'm sure the guys want to get into.
All right, let's go with that. Bob, a guy trains for a big fight. All of a sudden, he gets in there, and 5 seconds later, he's on the mat. What happened with Ben Askin?
Boom! Roasted! That's what happened.
That quote from the movie Friday sticks out in my head. But
wow! You got knocked! And we're going to dot it from there.
Yeah. But anyhow, yeah. I mean, you know, Ben Askren coming off, I think, 19-0, something like that. I mean, the guy's doing great over in Bellator. The big thing, he gets, you know, pitched over into the UFC and then in a controversial win over I just brain farted. I apologize. But whether he tapped
Robbie Lawler.
Yeah, Robbie Lawler. So another tough individual. So, the big surprise was from, in my opinion, was from Jorge. Like, I hate to admit it, I didn't know, you know, looking him up now, I mean, that guy's got a great record. You know,
oh,
he still beat people that, I mean, Cerrone's on that list, Al Quinta, he lost to, but I mean, just the caliber of guys that he's come across in his career, and then a win over Michael Chiesa, who also did great on that card. But anyway, you know, he talked about setting that up, and Askren coming out very confident, very cocky, in my opinion, and as a wrestler. And me as a striker, wrestlers aren't my favorite. I mean, they win. You know, you got your GSP fans, guys that play smart. They, you know, they'll hold you down and score by points. But I think he just kind of reviewed the tape, assumed Askren was going to go for the shoot, and I guess there was some bad blood in between him, came out and just delivered that. I think it glanced off the side of his temple and then hit into, like, his trap. I don't think it was a solid on top of the head. But, man, those temple shots, I mean, we've all seen in boxing and everything, a nice good hook to the temple and what that will do. And, I mean, imagine the force coming from that flying knee. I guess there was bad blood. I don't think he needed to roll around on the ground and tease him afterwards. But
I didn't think you would like that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The UFC, unfortunately, is becoming a more of a show of who can talk the biggest smack versus just be, you know, you don't got your good guys like your Randy Couture's and stuff anymore. But, wow, what a knockout. What a fantastic card. Now, he definitely got to go back to the drawing board and eat his piece of humble pie because that was a big slice. I still think he has a future.
I feel like – go ahead.
Go ahead. No, totally go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, Jorge Masvidal is a mean guy. He's mean. And in the sense that, you know, I'm sure Ben Askren was probably expecting there to be a bit more back and forth, a bit more fun on social media to try to generate some interest for this fight, a bit more than what would naturally occur. And Masvidal is just not that kind of guy. He takes everything seriously. And if you say something to him on social media or something to him online, he's going to expect the same energy to be there when he sees you in person. Whereas Ben Askren is a bit more, I mean, we've talked about Ben Askren's troll game quite a bit, where he's just out there having fun, and he's probably not thinking that it's all that serious. And Masvidal did his homework, though. I felt like he redid his homework. I mean, Ben reached for a double leg as soon as he saw Masvidal running at him. And that's not – Masvidal's known to run at people at the start of fights to try to get – to try to just take you off your game. And,
sure.
You know, to Askren's credit, he basically said, hey, you know, I lost. You know, I thought what I thought was going to happen didn't happen, and I got to eat my words. But to that extent, I think Ben Askren will be fine from this. Masvidal probably, I mean, judging by his record and the recent losses he's had, they've been split decisions. Granted, one was to Wonderboy when Wonderboy was probably coming off of the Woodley decision, so he was a bit fired up, and then it was a split decision to Damian Maia. But yeah, Bob, you said it. He's got some big fights on his resume, and he's won his fair amount of them. So at the top of 170, he's getting pretty tight. I think lots of people want to see Masvidal fight for a title. It's a shame that he has to leapfrog his buddy, Colby Covington. But I think moving forward, Ben Askren, though, was on Ariel Helwani's show, and he had one of the highest numbers as far as listeners were concerned. I believe it's now at 1.5 to 2 million listeners for that particular episode.
Yeah.
When that's not – yeah, so Ben Askren might be all right coming out of this. And if he can get back and maybe fight later on in the year and take on maybe a third or fourth or ranked fighter in the 170s, they might run it back with I can see him running it back with Robbie Lawler. Depending on what happens to Lawler and Covington, maybe he fights Covington. He might, you know, he's still a big draw, and he might. I mean, Dana White, that's what he wants. He wants guys who are going to bring in the dollars, who are going to bring in the views. And I can see Ben Askren growing even more, his star growing even more after this loss because of how he's bounced, how he handled it, and how he's kind
absolutely.
Of like, you know, he's still kind of having fun with it. Yeah.
See,
right.
Like the one thing about Ben Askren is Ben Askren is a troll and he talks a lot of trash. But one thing about Ben is he never takes himself too seriously. And I think what happened is, in light of what happened to him, right, he was thoroughly embarrassed. It wasn't about just being knocked out, but it was the manner in which it happened, 5 seconds. He's taking, you know, he's getting his slack on social media. But after listening to that interview with Ariel Helwani, he's a guy I always kind of respected anyway, but I have much more respect for him, specifically because of the credit he gave to Jorge Masvidal as a fighter. And specifically because he accepted the extra shots at the end. He said, hey, you know, I talk trash, I kind of deserve it. Whether we feel he did or not, the fact that he was man enough to stand up. And first of all, come on, Ariel Helwani, immediately after being knocked out practically. I also think that the guy is not done. I think he still has a good future. I think there are a lot of top 10 welterweights he could be. However, what happened to Ben Askren is something I found very interesting in what Masvidal said is that Ben Askren's really good on social media because he has time to think, you know, for Tim, he has time to think out his thoughts, type them out. But he's not good improvisationally. When he approaches Ben kind of freezes up. He doesn't have that same eloquence as far as his talk game, so to speak, and he freezes up. So he knew that, and he assumed that if he ran at Ben being, you know, having to improv, would do the natural thing, the thing that he's drilled since he was like 6 years old, shooting for a double A. So, you know, and I think something I like that Ben said is Ben said, hey, it wasn't a lucky shot. He goes, now, is it going to land 100 out of 100 times? No, but it takes a lot of skill to do it, and I couldn't do it. You know what I mean? So I credit Ben, and I think he comes out of this kind of looking not as bad as he could, and it takes a little pressure off him because now a lot of people are going to expect him to lose. So I don't think it hurts as much as it does his pride. Let me say that. It doesn't hurt his drawing power at all.
Right.
Yeah, I go back and forth.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think he's going to bounce back. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, the amateur
Bob,
fight.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, you know, I have to be, you know, 19, 20, 20 and 0. Otherwise, it ruins my streak. No, I think Askren is young enough. You guys are right. He's always had this blasé attitude. It's like he's having a great time. You can't take anything from him. He's a phenomenal wrestler. Hands down, and he's like, oh, okay, as a wrestler, I'm going to go over to the UFC, and I'm doing pretty good, you know what I mean, kicking everyone's butt. So, I mean, again, you know, you get that confidence, you get that arrogance. You know what I mean? And I hate to say, you're going to throw in the dad joke. He's Ben Askren for it. So, anyway,
coming forward.
Wow.
But coming forward,
oh, wow.
I think it's going to make him
I'm
a better
you, Bob, fight. You're a natural, man. You're a natural, Bob.
Love you, Ted. So, but, yeah, I think he's going to come out a better man for this. It's going to humble him up a little bit. He'll get back into his game plan. And like, look, I can't walk through this UFC as only a wrestler. If I'm serious, I got to learn some stand-up. I got to look some defenses. I got to learn some kicks. You know what I mean? They call it MMA for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, even before my time, everyone came out with a moniker. You know what I mean? I was jiu-jitsu, or I was a taekwondo, or I was a kickboxer. I was a box, if you will.
Okay.
And then the wrestlers dominated. You know, you had that whole, after the jiu-jitsu guys and Hoist did his thing, then the wrestlers came in, the Severns, the Colemans. And it wasn't until my coach Maurice kicked out or knocked out Mark Coleman with the head
Marco
kick.
Marco Coleman?
Yeah, yeah. Mark Coleman with the head kick. And then it's like, oh, well, strikers have a play too. So, again, you have to anymore be a well-rounded fighter. You can't just be, I mean, you know, you've got your dominant guys. I mean, then you go, you know, we roll this right into segue into the Jones fight. You know, he played it safe, you know. You know, fight, and he had to because – coming off of, I mean, he knows Thiago Santos has got some power and he stays in there. And then if you see those guys both limp out of the ring at the end, I mean, no one really won that fight. I mean, you, no one's going to beat John Jones in his backyard being the UFC, but,
right.
You know what I mean? He's a Dana White, he's a cash cow. You're not ever going to beat those guys without an absolute knockout. Yeah, great card overall. So many good fights. The girls, Jorge.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Hey, Bob, let me ask you a question. Do you think that
Rockhold's
going to get a shot at UFC 239 after his knockout of Yoel Romero?
Rockhold needs to go back to modeling. He really does.
Yeah.
His lack of defense has been his issue for a very long time. And if you have poor defense at 185, you can't take – that's not going to translate well to guys who are now all suddenly 20 pounds stronger than the guys who were previously fighting. Now, you got to take the Yoel was basically – Yoel's a heavyweight. I mean, that guy is so big. The fact that he gets to 185 is absolutely mind-boggling. That guy looks like – I mean, he looks like a middle linebacker. He really does. I mean, his neck starts at his ears and ends at the bottom of his spine. So, I'm like, the fact that he got flatlined by Yoel should have let you know that I don't see how that could change any differently when he goes up to 205. He got knocked out by Michael Bisping, who's a point fighter. So,
I don't think
he can hang. I just don't think he can do it. And he's got to think about the rest of his life. He does not have the jaw for it.
You know what, Armstead? But the key is something that Bob said. We're talking about Ben Askren. Ben Askren has got to go back. He has to humble himself. Luke has never been able to humble himself.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, for all his skills, all his tremendous techniques, number one, for all his tremendous techniques, he really doesn't put it all together well. He doesn't fight with a high IQ at all. Just talking about fundamental boxing defense absolutely sucks. But the problem is he's never made those adjustments. He's never learned the things he's needed to in the gym. So what you're looking at is a guy who 5 years later has the same holes he had 5 years ago. And it's because of the attitude.
Yep.
Everyone likes to dump on him. You can call him smug and this, that, and the third because, you know, he comes across as the, you know, kind of the airhead dumb jock. But the fact of the matter that he's made no adjustments in his game, it just shows you, his mentality in regards to fighting, at least. So kind of like you, I mean, it's the second time he had his jaw broken, right? This is the third time he's been knocked out in four fights, not to mention just the injury. It's time to hang it up. I'm never one to tell a guy to retire unless it seems like a guy is constantly getting hurt. That's what Luke's doing. And he's constantly overlooking opponents that are hurting him, which is quite odd as well. So.
Mm-hmm.
Hey guys, we're joined by Dr.
Yeah.
Chris. Chris, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good, guy. I'm enjoying your conversation.
There you go.
I saw Coleman when he first came out of college. He looked unbeatable.
Awesome. Yeah.
He was a strong guy. He was a college wrestler, if I remember right. Yeah, he was strong.
Yeah, yeah.
But eventually somebody caught up to him. These guys are, like you say, by the time you learn how to box, you learn how to kick, you learn how to do this, you're going to be 27 years old.
Yeah.
Before you're well-rounded, 28 mm-hmm. years old. Then they
mm-hmm.
smash you in the face 50 times with the elbows, you age real quick. So I mean, it's a rough damn sport, you know? But I remember Coleman, he looked unbeatable until somebody kicked him in the head, and that was the end of that.
Yeah.
You know, the other night I saw a knee kick. The guy had to get out of there in 15 seconds. Guy ran across the ring and jumped up in the air and kneed the guy in the face, in the jaw, and knocked him out colder than hell in about 15 seconds, 16 seconds?
Five seconds.
You know?
Actually, 5 seconds.
It was five seconds.
It should have been three. It should have been two and a half to three, really. But
yeah. Mm. By the time you count to 10, mm-hmm. you know, or they stop the fight, you eat up 8 or 9 seconds. But that's a devastating sport, and you got to be well-rounded because you got to fight on the ground, up in the air. Your legs got to be good. You got to be able to kick. You got to be able. I saw a guy the other night had to be 6'4", 160 pounds. His legs were, I mean, so long, you couldn't believe how far away he was and was kicking the guy right in the face. I'm trying to think of his name now.
Mm-hmm. It's John Jones.
But he was
maybe
a tall, skinny guy.
Israel
Boyle.
Adesanya.
Boy, there's no way in hell to fight that guy unless you got a 2x4 and whack him in the damn shins. You got a chance. You know?
Yeah, but
he's kicking in the damn
the
face.
Because the 2x4s are like shins. Or the shins are like 2x4s. So that's part of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only way I'd fight that guy.
So,
let me go in there with it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question.
So what does Amanda Nunes do, though? What does Amanda Nunes do now?
She's got to have the rematch of Cyborg. That's her stiffest competition. I don't think – I mean, she's already kind of – I mean, she's beaten Cyborg. She's also beaten Jermaine Duratami. But obviously the Cyborg fight is the most intriguing one. So Cyborg gets past her next opponent, who she should, because the girl's a little green, although a good submission artist. I think that is the fight to make, but the big thing would be negotiating with Cyborg for that fight, because Cyborg's contract ends after her next fight. So
mm-hmm.
I think that is the fight to make for Amanda, though. I mean, unless you want to run it back with Shevchenko. I mean, because, you know, those two are basically neck and neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the only person who can get for any real trouble is Cyborg. But Cyborg's has to, like, did you see what happened after the Cyborg fight when she was talking to Clarissa Shields?
Absolutely, I saw that. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, she was exactly right. Clarissa Shields was exactly right. She was like, why did you get in there and brawl with her when you've been boxing with me for so long? You know how to keep her off of you. You have a jab. What are you doing? And I could see Cyborg actually really taking that advice to heart and actually going out there with a game plan and not thinking that she could just maul everybody like she had been doing for so long. I'm still not convinced that Amanda Nunes is better than Cyborg. I think Cyborg just made a huge mistake.
Did you see the press conference beforehand?
She hadn't been fighting anybody. I did.
Hey, Armstead, did you see? So here's what scared me, and this is what scares me whenever a fighter says this. I mean, for years it scared me, and I heard Cyborg said it. Cyborg said she thinks she's the pressure, but what happens when she hits me and nothing happens? I show her I'm the pressure. And I said, oh, that's a problem. Whenever
mm-hmm.
your game plan is
mm-hmm.
like, what happens when I take your best shot? Then I'm like, Jesus Christ. Not when I avoid
right.
your best shot and counter you, but when I take it. So right then and there, you saw during the fight that Cyborg, Amanda, Cyborg hit Amanda. Amanda caught Cyborg with a good shot. And Cyborg went to destroy mode. She stopped. It was just swing bombs away from the moment she got hit. Literally saying exactly, doing exactly what she said she was going to do. So, you know, when I hear a fighter say that, well, what's going to happen when I take the best shot and I'm still in your face? Then I'm like, dude, you know, that's probably a failing strategy, because if the guy's smart, he's going to hit you with 20 best shots throughout the course of the fight. So,
right.
You're right. I think if she smarts a little, if she fights a little smarter, I think she's capable of beating her. I do think Cyborg has better cardio, and I think she's a better kickboxer. I do not know if Cyborg can avoid the inclination to slug it out the moment she gets socked with a good wallop from Amanda. That would be my concern.
Yeah. Yeah. If Cyborg could also just not get in that. She's a jiu-jitsu black belt as well. She has other other things she can do. She has other ways she can be successful. She has no need to do that. So
no, she needs to not go in the shooter box Vanderlei Silva mode.
She can make.
Yeah, that's what she does.
Exactly.
She goes literally in the shooter box Vanderlei Silva mode. And I was like, here we go. Here we go. Axe murderer mode. Nah, it's not going to work. Amanda hits too hard. And you know what?
Yep.
Something my brother pointed out, too, is when they stood next to each other, Cyborg was taller, but Amanda looked more dense. Amanda is a big girl.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Cyborg completely underestimated her strength and her power.
And Cyborg was also wearing heels in that face-to-face, where Nunes was wearing her regular old, like, Converse All-Stars. So that's why she looked even bigger. Because she's only an inch taller. Yeah, you know, Nunes is 5'8", you know, and she got traps like she's been doing pull-ups her whole life, man.
Did you see the ESPN body issue of her?
Yeah.
Like she did, yeah, like they showed some excerpts from the ESPN body issue, and she just, she has a big trunk, you know what I mean, and broad shoulders.
Yep.
She's just a very, stout woman, and she's literally built kind of like a wall. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, she's not significant. Like, my brother said it right during the fight. She looks a little bigger than Cyborg. And I was like, yeah, I'm kind of surprised by that.
Yeah. She did look a little bit. Because normally when they go back and forth between the fighters before the fight starts, you're kind of like, oh, man, you can see the size difference. And that was the first time I looked and I went, wait a minute. This is right before the fight started. I was like, she ain't that much bigger than her. She may have 5 pounds.
Cyborg's a little rangier than her.
That's about it.
Yeah, like Cyborg's a little rangier than her, but Amanda just looked thicker and more dense. You know what I mean?
She looked thicker. Yeah, she did. She looked thicker. And Amanda hit. She hit. You said it. She hits so hard. She hits. She hits so hard.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing. I got no desire to take either one of them to a dance. Man.
What? No.
You guys can have them, huh? You guys can have them. You can have my share. If she was in a bar, I'd leave her alone. I wouldn't even buy her. I wouldn't even attempt to buy her a drink. She come over there and knock the hell out of her.
what a
rough...
Buy me a drink. Me a drink.
If she came up with, if she told me to buy her a drink, I'd buy her a drink. I'd be like, yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
What would you like?
You better buy me a drink.
I don't want to.
I drink with Cyborg. That way, if I got intoxicated, she'd
She's from another planet. She's an alien.
Mm-hmm.
She came from another planet, that girl.
Mm-hmm.
She's too mean.
Mm-hmm.
Too mean to be from this country. Where the hell ever she came from. But she's consistent.
Amanda's reaching her prime.
So,
yeah, she's reaching her prime, too. Her fight IQ is getting significantly better. She's learning to pace herself better.
It is.
Her technique is beginning to, you know, really get more crisp. I like this. She's on a hot streak for a reason, because she's kind of clicking right now. Same thing with Masvidal. Masvidal's always been extremely talented. But for him, it's kind of clicking, but Amanda, I think, is really in her prime. And just from a technical and fundamental standpoint, at least, you know, from my realm as a Thai guy, her technique just looks significantly, even since the Ronda Rousey fight, her technique has looked significantly more crisp.
Right. Completely maturing as a fighter.
And I would
absolutely.
You remember when, to the Kat Zingano fight.
Oh, that's like a different fighter altogether.
He had her beat, and she just ran out of gas. So she's been able to work her gas tank much better now, too.
The same thing happened in the first Shevchenko fight, except Shevchenko didn't win the fight, but she came on. And, to me, in the second Shevchenko fight, it seemed like Amanda conserved herself a little too much. But it seemed like, she started to work that out a little bit, man. She's hit her stride. She's going to be tough. Very tough to beat for the next couple years, I perceive.
Agreed.
Hey, Ty, let me ask you a boxing question, Ty. There's been a lot of conjecture whether Alvarez was going to fight Sergey Kovalev on the 19th, in September on DAZN. But now the IBF came out and said that he has to face Sergey Derevyanchenko and soon to keep his title. Do you think that's going to happen?
I do not think he'll fight Sergey Derevyanchenko, and I do believe he'll be stripped. The IBF is one of the few sanctioning bodies that actually really enforces their mandatories. They're pretty strict about that. With that being said, Canelo signed this, obviously the richest contract in boxing history with his own. He's getting $35 million a fight. So the Zone has a say in who he fights. They kind of have put influence on who he fights. And the fact of the matter is that the Zone right now is only willing to okay two opponents, and that would be one, Sergey Kovalev, or two, Gennady Golovkin. Of course, Gennady Golovkin is the fight they would want, but they would approve the Sergey Kovalev fight too. As far as Demetrius Andrade, If in good faith the Kovalev and the Triple G fights can't be worked out, the Zone would approve the Demetrius Andrade fight. So we're used to seeing Canelo have a lot of power in who he chooses, the judges, this, that, and the third. He still has significant power, but as far as choice of opponent, because the Zone is looking to increase their subscriptions, they are not going to more than likely approve of Sergey Derevyanchenko, who no one knows. Even though I know a lot of hardcore fight fans know he's a good fighter, it would be a very entertaining fight. The fact of the matter is he doesn't pose the risk to casual fans that a Sergey Kovalev or a Triple G would pose. Thus, I do think he will be stripped, and it's going to be interesting what happens, because obviously we know Canelo does not like to be dictated to, which is why he dropped the WBC belt a few years ago instead of fighting Gennady Golovkin. In the WBC, which just stated him as franchise champion, has always been in bed with Canelo, so we know he will not be dictated to. So it's going to be pretty interesting over these next few weeks to see what transpires.
Good.
The Zones recently just shot up their fees too. They're up to like $20 a month now. When they were really, they were like $6 a month not that long ago, like a few months ago. It was really recent.
Yeah, so they started, a year and a half ago, and they started, and the subscription price was literally like $6.99. I was reading they were going to boost it. Then they boosted it. So, and then they got some additional subscriptions. And then the fights, these big fights are pulling in subscriptions, which is one of the reasons why they want Canelo to fight a pretty popular opponent, because they're trying to justify this pricing and at the same time pull more subscriptions in.
Okay.
How about let me ask you another question that I've had a couple people just emailed. The new undercard for Manny and Keith's fight is Caleb Plant, 18-0 with 10 knockouts, against Irish Mike Lee, 21-0 with 11 knockouts. What's your thoughts on that one, either you or Chris?
I like that guy Plant. I like the way he fights. The other guy I don't know much about. I don't know much about the other guy. But I like that guy Plant.
I can tell you one thing about the other guy, Dr. Chris. Prepare for your good buddy Butch Carroll there boo-hooing when he sees his Notre Dame boy get outboxed and beat up. Because that's probably what happened. Mike Lee's a Notre Dame kid. So he's a Notre Dame kid, so Butch is kind of roots for him. But he's never been with anybody like Plant. He's 175. He's fighting at 168 for this fight. He's never fought that low. I don't think it's going to probably look a lot like Notre Dame does in national championships. It's not going to go too well for the Fighting Irish.
Let me pick these two things, Frank. He's nasty. He's nasty.
Wow. He is. Let me tell you
what's happening in Philly. I picked up a paper the other night. It was like a Daily News thing about this guy named Canto, an up-and-coming heavyweight. He fought on the heavyweight card in Las Vegas. He's like maybe 15-0 or something. A boy out of South Philly.
How big is he, Dr. Chris? How tall is he? 6'4".
But he's only about 215. He's not. He needs to fill out and get bigger. He's not quite the big heavyweight size yet. But he's young. He's only like 20. His name is Canto. Anyway, I'm reading. They said his father trained him, and they said, but he wasn't his first trainer. His first trainer for 40 amateur fights was Elvin Thompson. You know Elvin? Elvin used to be in my son's corner. I would get him for a big fight. I would get Elvin. Elvin's had a gym in West Philadelphia. He had Frankie Fletcher. He had Anthony Fletcher. Okay. He's had them all. He's been a corner man forever. He had several good fighters and champions. This kid might be well trained. He might be a better boxer. If Elvin's had him for 40 fights, he's going to know a hell of a lot about boxing, because Elvin can really train. He can really train boxers. So I got a big kick out of it. He's got a following in South Philadelphia. They already got him next to God. You know what I mean? They got him up there he's going to be the real Rocky. That's a mythical Rocky. So he trains in a garage up at 9th Street. His father had a garage. So I'm wondering what happened between him and Elvin, because Elvin would love to have trained that guy all the way through. But that's what happens to him. He'll take a guy so far and then they'll steal him,
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah. When the money gets big.
Do you know anything about the kid's power?
No, he's got a lot of knockouts, but he's at that stage where he's growing, and I think he should call up Evander Holyfield on how to put on 15 pounds of muscle. Evander will tell him. I remember asking Evander one night on our show. He said, "Yeah, I had a strength coach. We did talk about that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Remember, I had a guy that taught me." Flexibility.
Yep,
I had a guy, four different guys, because Lou Duva told him he's going to get muscle bound and get murdered, and it turned out the opposite.
Yep.
So this kid right now is about where. Now he's bigger than Holyfield was, but
I've met a lot of fighters, in person, and the biggest fighter I've ever met was Vladimir Klitschko. But the most imposing fighter I've ever met was Evander Holyfield. I'm 6'3". He's literally, about my height, but Jesus Christ. Like, he just from shoulder to shoulder, it was like a mile. And if I ever met and touched a man, it looked like he literally looked like, down to his eyebrow, everything was cut of stone. I was really imposing. I was like, holy, and I had met, literally Klitschko like a year before, and I was impressed with the way he moved. He just bounded, very athletic. But with Holyfield, I was just like, holy crap. Like, he just looked like you couldn't hurt him with a bat. Never seen anything like that.
When they measure Holyfield's skull, they're going to find out it's about 2 inches thicker than everybody else. You use that thing like a bat.
I would absolutely believe it. I would.
That's a damn battering ram. Remember, I remember when Tyson bit his ear off. Bit his ear.
He's got a thick head, but he's light one ear.
The funny thing is the great Mills Lane was the ref. He bites his ear twice.
Great.
Mills Lane lets the round continue. He doesn't just disqualify the fight immediately.
Yeah.
They resume boxing for another 30 seconds before they.
Yeah. Well, the ear don't
Mills
bleed.
Lane,
the ear doesn't.
The best one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, wow.
The ear doesn't bleed too much. It doesn't bleed too much. You know? But it did look funny because he did take a good chunk out of it. But you know what? I was defending Tyson that night. I said, Christ, that big ball head was ramming him in the forehead, banging him around. I said, I'd bite the guy, too. I got a round of booze. We had 55 guys at my house that night. You jackass.
People are going to support that.
Yeah, they called me a jackass and all. I said, hell, I seen a guy in Marcus Smith bite a guy's finger off and spit it out. So that doesn't impress me too much. Little piece of an ear. You know, you got to do more than that. We had a guy in Hook was the best biter in the world. And
the best fighter or biter, did you say?
No, biter, B-I-T-E-R. Biter. He could bite the living hell out. He could bring an elephant to his knees with a bite.
Best biter in the world. Wow.
Best biter in the world.
Biter in the world.
Jimmy Carr. He bit everybody. Man, you'd hear a goddamn scream about three blocks away. You knew that Campbell sunk his teeth in somebody, you know?
Wow.
But that's how he fought. And when I saw that with what Tyson did, I said, you know, he did get headbutted. It ruined the fight. Now he can't win because he got that cut. You know, I didn't feel too bad about that. Tyson really wanted to try hard to knock him out, but he knew once he got cut, he was done. He was done. He couldn't
fight
anymore.
I really thought that was going to – like, and I wanted Holyfield to win. I was a huge Holyfield fan. In the first fight, I was pins and needles. And the second fight, I was pins and needles until they came out. It was something about that fight, even before the headbutt, where I thought it was going to be shorter. It looked like Holyfield was going to fight downhill. And it looked like Tyson was going to have a hard time with that. Holyfield was really emboldened by his victory. And I think he knew that he could kind of, you know, he was defensively, you know, clever enough to not get caught with the best shots. But he knew he could take Tyson's best, and he knew he could wear Tyson down. And it looked really to me like he was coming to bully Tyson that night. And I really felt it. People say it was a way out. We've all been in the gym, and we've all been really frustrated. I'm not going to say it was a way out, but it was a fight that he had to resort to everything because he was going to get his ass whooped that night. I just didn't look good to me at all the way that was going down.
I talked my buddy out of betting $20,000 on Holyfield. He wanted to kill me when he got home. He wanted to kill me. Not only did he not, but the guy that was driving him to the fight took the tickets out and put them on top of the car, and forgot to put them back in his lapel. They took off. He drove to the fight, and all we're talking about, you know, is this fight. When he got there, the tickets, nobody could find the tickets. They never saw the fight. They had to run back and look for the tickets. The fight was over before they got back. He said, Chris, you cost me $20,000. That night, me and my son both talked. Tyson's going to kill him. I said, Tyson's going to kill him. And boy, were we wrong.
So you got booed that night and cost your friend $20. That was a banner memory.
When I said that ain't so bad. That ain't so bad biting his ear. What the hell's wrong with that? You know. It was funny when Tyson fought, we'd have 55, 60 people at my house watching the fight because I had to buy all kind of pork sandwiches. I'd have to go out and get 4 or 5strawberry shortcakes, because the wives would come. But the next guy, Like when De La Hoya would fight, I get 20 people. Tyson fights, I get 55, 60 people. He was so popular. Everybody wanted to watch him, you know? So, and have you seen him lately? He really looks old.
Yeah.
Have you seen him?
Yeah.
He really
yeah.
got old
yeah,
with a gray beard.
Yeah,
yeah, the poor guy really looks old.
But
yeah,
you
he
know
looked,
what? He's really
he
healthy
looked,
now. He's like, he's doing really well, though. You know what I mean? That's,
oh,
that's a good thing. Like,
he's talking, yeah. He's talking.
Yeah, this is a guy we thought would probably be dead by now. And
yep,
sure. He's doing really well. He seems really adjusted. And, you know, he's
well,
got
he,
a lot of different ventures he's involved in because everyone loves his personality and his humor now. So.
Yeah, he well, I said he really turned his life around. And he said, I don't want my kids to see my fights because, you know, I look like an animal out there. So I don't want my kids to see this. And the way he was talking, like he said, that was
yeah.
another person. That wasn't me. You know,
he's making great
he
money
said,
being a parody of himself. That's exactly what
yeah, yeah, he
said, he's got like
yeah,
the cartoon
yeah.
show. He's really making great money
yeah.
being a parody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad for him. But Don King
yeah.
had to steal half the money he ever made.
Right.
Sure.
But he was an animal. I mean, he was feral. I mean, he didn't have the brain to go. I mean, he had all of the brawn, but like a buddy of mine just sent me the other day, you know, that interview after, I can't remember what fight, and he's all like, I was in there, my back was broken. And then they're like, what? They're like, yeah, I had
what?
A broke back. They're like, what part? The spinal. Fucking spinal.
What the hell?
You know?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, he was never, you know, reminds me of Forrest Gump. I'm not a smart man, but I know how to fight. But anyway, I mean, Tyson, you would be thankful to go drop that $50 for pay-per-view to see a 10-second fight just because you got to witness it. But then he'd do some shenanigans or something afterwards that just make
yeah,
you
sure.
feel like you got your money's worth. But he's matured
yeah.
as a person, a fighter, an actor. I mean, he's doing a lot of stuff. I'm glad he's getting
yeah,
money. He deserves it.
Yeah, he said he made a study of himself. He said that was somebody else.
Yeah.
He said that's
yeah.
not who I am today, you know. And then
yeah,
it looked
that,
like he made the
having,
he,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's
I like listening to
ending.
Him now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a surprisingly happy ending to that story that we obviously didn't see coming at the time.
Yeah.
So something to be said about that.
And his tattoos are blending in now. They don't look as bad.
Chris, one of your favorite fighters had a fight last week, Jamel Charlo. He had a decision over Brandon Adams. And it took him 12 rounds to do it. What's your thoughts on that one?
I think Charlo now is a full middleweight, and he's fighting full middleweights. He can't bully these guys around. They're staying 10 mm-hmm. 12 rounds with him now. He's not knocking anybody out in the second and third round like he used to because these guys are bigger, they're tougher. And the middleweight division, you know, these guys are coming in bigger than him. And he's not knocking anybody out lately because it's a different division that he's in now. That one, he jumped from 154 up to 160. These guys that are coming in and ring, like that opponent of Charlo came in at 174. And Charlo couldn't get up. Maybe 169, 170. You know, well, he was allowed to put more in that, but he just couldn't carry it. But these guys they're able to take his punch. The same guy he would knock out 6 months ago, these middleweights are taking his shots now. So I think he's going to have some rough nights. You know, he's going to have
yeah.
some rough nights. I don't think he's going to run over anybody anymore. So, you know, we'll be able to tell when he fights a guy. You know, a good, tough, big middleweight. Somebody can match him blow for blow. I'm anxious to see that. You know, see how he does against a real good hitter and a guy that can take his best shot. So we'll see. It's coming up. It's going to be coming up in the near future because these middleweights
oh, yeah.
are big now. Holy Jesus, are they big.
Yeah.
You know,
hey,
so.
Ty, what do you think of Joseph Parker's last outing with Alex Lippi?
Well, he was fighting Alex Liepaja at this point as a punching bag at this point. And that's what you saw, a walking punching bag. And the fight could have been stopped a lot earlier. Getting back to Jermell Charlo, while I agree with Dr. Chris in principle, I have a difference with the specificity. Brandon Adams, the gentleman he was fighting, typically fights at 154. He's a very dense guy. He did weigh more than Charlo on fight night. But even after the fight, he said, hey, I'm going back down to my normal weight at 154. I fought at 160 because it was an opportunity. He won the contender. Mm-hmm. His best opponents had been Willie Nelson, who he lost to, and Shane Mosley Jr., who he beat. Here's what I believe. I believe when I look at both Charlos, I look at guys who are, you know, incredibly athletic and incredibly talented, but gentlemen who have stagnated in their craft. They've gotten to a certain point. A lot of what they did always worked for them, and I haven't seen them add new wrinkles as they've upgraded their level of competition. The only time that Jermall Charlo looked good at middleweight was when he was fighting Hugo Centeno, who's a certain level and got in there and was scared. This kid that he was fighting wasn't scared and came to fight. And also, you know, wasn't, you know, pretty slick defensively. But when I look at these guys, the one thing I'm starting to recognize is they're both getting hit way too easy with the jab. For guys, you know, with their amateur background and their, you know, their skill set, they should not be getting hit with the jab so easily. But these guys are sucker for jabs because they're not moving their head and they're loading up on their right hands. They're loading up on their big
shot. Yeah, loading up. Jermall loads up on his right hand. And he tries to kill you. Throws it all night long.
And that's how Jermell lost to Tony Harrison. Tony Harrison beat Jermell Charlo with a little bit of lateral movement in the jab because Jermell Charlo was loading up on that right all night long and was just missing it over his head. So both guys have kind of become 1-2 fighters. You'll see them rip the left hook. But they do first of all, neither one is relaxed. And because they're not relaxed, they're not fluid. And I don't know what's going on, but at one time it seemed like Jermall, the bigger fighter, was, you know, more of a power puncher, and the younger brother was more fluid. But now what I'm starting to see is both guys fight tense. Neither one is fluid. They become more of 1-2 kind of fighters who are always over-launching their power shots because you can see them loading up on it. And, again, they're suckers for jabs. So I just see from a craft standpoint, I saw the same – a good buddy of ours, but I saw the same thing with Andre Berto. From a craft standpoint, he stagnated, then he started to regress. So right now I'm seeing, like, with Canelo Alvarez, the same age as the Charlos, you see this kid adding new wrinkles to his game every time you see him. I'm not seeing that with the Charlos. What I'm seeing more than anything is stagnation.
Well, they're not progressing at a rate they should, you know, or at a rate that they think they should be progressing. Because these guys are bigger, stronger, and tougher. And they're not going to knock these big middleweights out. That's all, you know. And they don't throw the left hook behind the right hand. They do not do it. They load up with that right. Everybody ducks under it. Goes over their head.
Everybody. Yep.
And if they throw a left hook, he catch them guys going down. You can maybe catch one right on a butt and knock them the hell out.
And you know what else, Dr. Chris? You never see these guys adjust mid-fight. They literally cut what their game plan is when they step in. That's what they do all fight long.
Right.
Yep. So,
yeah, my daughter-in-law just pulled up. I'm sitting out here in front of the real estate office. I'm going to take a break for a minute. All right.
Chris, with the end of our time here.
I'm doing the fight show. I'm going Saturday now.
It's only one Chris.
It's so entertaining.
Bob, what did you think of the Charlo fight? Did you see
it? I didn't see that. I was all wrapped up in the UFC.
I want to take them both down Marcus Hook to the riverfront.
Not
I want to show them where I live.
From the boat. I love that guy.
I'm saying I'm coming down to my job. Okay. All right, take care now.
Love it.
That's my daughter-in-law. My son my son bought a Tesla.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh wow.
He likes to waste money on cars. So he buys his Tesla, but the damn thing is lightning fast. It's an electric engine. You know what I mean? It's all electric. And you know, I never knew much about them, but now they're lightning fast. I can't believe how fast this thing is. You know, and he's got a thing he just put in his house to recharge it. Because, you know, you got to charge them every so often or they don't run.
300 miles. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many miles
and,
is that?
300.
I don't know. According to
Wow.
It doesn't go far. If he's going on a trip, he's got to have a gas station or somebody that's going to be selling electricity somewhere. You know.
Right.
So, which.
Selling.
You know, well, he's going to be pushing that car around somewhere. You know.
That's for sure. Well, guys,
at
the end of our hour.
And guess how much they cost? Take a guess how much a Tesla cost.
Ridiculous. $135.
Yeah.
More than I am.
Is that a lot of money or is that a lot of money? That's a lot of money.
That's more than any house I bought.
Yeah,
how
I know.
How much
is the
car?
$135.
I have a hard time.
Oh, wow.
My first, my first house cost me
$10,000. $135 for something that depreciates in value. I can't justify it.
As soon as you drive off the lot, those new ones with those suicide doors look like Back to the Future stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, they go up. Yeah, they're crazy.
Yeah.
You know
what?
Yeah.
Real quick story. I was talking to Bernard Hopkins, and one thing Bernard Hopkins said is that when he first got money, he bought a car. From that point on, he's never bought a car. He said, I will not spend money on something that depreciates. So he leases everything, keeps it for about 2 years and gets something else. He said, I will not buy a car.
Well, I waited 14 years before I bought a new car. I had two rich aunts and they would drive a car for 5 years and have 15,000 miles on it. So why buy a new car? I go buy their cars, you know?
Yeah.
And they sell it to me. Yeah, I bought my aunt's Chevy Monte Carlo Chevy for $500. It had 12,000 miles on it. So why buy a new car? I had them. I got in, and I said then, it's shocking how much the American person spends on a car over their lifetime, more than their house mortgage.
Sure.
You know, if you add it all up, so it just doesn't pay. Doesn't pay. So anyway. But, you know, my son's a car. He's also got a Shelby. He's got a torpedo Shelby. Scares me half to death with that damn thing. You know?
Sure.
Watch this. He goes, whoa. He's going 90 down the street. I go, wait a minute. Let me the hell out of this car if you're going to do that. You know? I don't bounce well. You know? off the damn tree. I don't bounce good off a tree. You know? So, anyway. But she just pulled up in a Tesla. She loves the damn thing. I mean, they're not pretty. They're not pretty.
No.
You know. So, wow. Well,
you had those electric
guys,
cars.
At the end of our hour here, they're about to cut us off. That's what he's working on.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for everything. We appreciate you being on with us, Chris. We appreciate you being on with us and both of you for the input that you give. Ty, you're always the go-to guy that helps us out on this program, and we really appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and see somebody in a uniform, please acknowledge them. Let them know you know they're there. It's very tough times domestically and in foreign lands for anybody in uniform. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Henwick, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, New Castle County Police, Patrolman Anofo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longwood V Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Nazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department. Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department. Deputy Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Lieutenant George Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department. Patrolman Charlie Condon, Tarpon Springs Police Department. Patrol Deputy Charlie Kotloff, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department. Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond. Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Jerry Pikus, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Arthur Hoop, Wilmington Fire Department. FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio. Delaware State Trooper Stephen Ballard. Corporal Stephen Ballard. Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter. Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard. Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Bill Gentry, Highland County Sheriff's Department. Deputy Clay Serba, Clay County Sheriff's Department. Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department. Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Deputy Sheriff. And Officer Robert McKetchin, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department. Brothers and sisters, though, you may be 10-7 at this time. At some time, we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the road ride up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless and have a great week.
Shem alek ma yelama, Shem ahezahir ma, Son Hashem evorat fed, Hakuig again ma yelama.
Thank you. right, bud. Love you.